Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Come help us celebrate a birthday today of someone that we love very much. One who has given us service and love, and whom we have returned this service and love, to whom we have returned the service and love with our own affection. It's 100 years old this year, I should say. She is a dowager of our national park, it's a dowager of our American government, American civilization. It is the National Park Service, which will turn 100 on August 25th, 2016. And our guest today, I'm pleased to say, is Superintendent Ed W. Clark, who is director of the entire Gettysburg National Military Park and the Eisenhower National Historic Site. Been here for just 2.5 years, so welcome. And at the same time, how does the superintendent, how does the anniversary, the birthday, fit in with your own goals for the Gettysburg National Military Park?
Well, thank you for having me today. The centennial is a great opportunity for us to really try to grab America's attention. We've always, I think, had a very positive image with the public. I think, you know, many folks can reflect upon their own childhood and going around and seeing national parks. But today we struggle, with the tension of the American public. There's so much competition for, our leisure time and our attention. And so this 100th anniversary enables us to reach out with a special message. And that's been Find Your Park is the tagline that we've used. You may have seen some advertisements and different ways that the Park Service and other friends organizations have been reaching out to the public, trying to raise that profile and get people here.
Find Your Park is the theme of the 100th. The theme of the 50th. Now I'm going to date myself, Superintendent. was Mission 66, which began in 56 under President Eisenhower. It was a major fundraiser, but also investment in the parks.
Right.
It's not quite the same then this year, though I imagine there's still going to be some sort of emphasis on maintenance and improvement.
Absolutely. Really, the effort got underway probably maybe even about a decade or so ago with the first centennial initiative under the Bush administration. And there was really an infusion of both private and public money on various projects to improve the parks and particularly deal with the very large maintenance backlog that we're currently facing across the whole park system. And then in the most recent administration, in the last several years, we've had the ability at the park level to apply for different funds. A lot of times those funds have to be matched at least one-to-one with private dollars. So that idea of a public-private partnership has played very strongly in the Park Service today as a whole, but specifically about around our centennial. The National Park Foundation has about a $350 million campaign that they're raising money for different projects across the service. They're being very, very successful in that. And then friends groups or other nonprofit groups like Gettysburg Foundation here with these parks, we're raising money for the purposes of working on maintenance backlog, improving resource condition, and improving visitor experience.
That maintenance backlog must be a headache for a superintendent all the time. The limited funds and then just wear and tear, plus the fact that the environment changes all the time. Bushes grow, flowers.
Mother Nature has a plan.
Yeah, that's right. And then roads wear out and so on. And then you've got 17 miles of road, let alone how many hundreds of acres to maintain.
It's about 6,000 acres in the park, in the military park, and then about 700 over at Eisenhower. You're right, many miles of roads and trails and buildings and monuments. It's quite a lot to keep up with, not to mention the landscape that you mentioned that takes a tremendous amount of effort to keep it looking, like it's been restored to that 1863 appearance. But it really is. It takes an awful lot of effort. The challenge, I think, that many parks face is a lot of that infrastructure that was built in the late 1950s and 1960s is now 50
yes.
years old.
Yes.
And and oftentimes that's the life cycle of some of these facilities. And without large appropriations or a lot of philanthropic effort, you know, we always seem to be losing ground rather than gaining ground with all of this infrastructure that we have to keep up with.
And attendance is still good. I mentioned to you before we went on the air here that driving to the parking lot this morning, I thought, wow, it's just 10 o'clock in the morning, and the parking lot is all, the first parking lot is already full. So.
Right.
We're getting people to come. Is the attendance up to standard, up to what you expect?
Sure. You know, I always joke when people ask me about the visitation here to the battlefield, and we count somewhere between 1.2 and 1.3 million people. Gettysburg Battlefield is not like a Yellowstone, Yosemite, or a Grand Canyon where you have to drive through an entrance gate, and we could actually really count heads. And so we have some statistical modeling that we utilize. And I think we actually probably count a little low.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing we do, because we count consistently, we can definitely see trends. And of course, 2013 was a big year for us. I think it was up, maybe what was it, 7 or 8% over the previous year in 2013. Of course, as you would imagine, 2014, it went down a
yes.
little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the last couple of years have been up, and we're on track to at least be equal with those 2013 numbers this year. You're seeing this across the whole of the Park Service, where visitation had been either stagnant or maybe even declining slightly in the last several years. But most parks are seeing an uptick. I think some, like Yellowstone, might even have a record year in terms of the numbers of visitors that come.
Yeah, and more limited spaces such as that have a real problem then with the impact footprint, I guess you call it, the number of people who are stomping around like Tetons is often had a
right. We talk about carrying capacity, kind of what's the in many places Zion has tried to deal with that with transportation
busing.
Systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Yosemite Valley is this time of year often like a major urban area with a number of people that are there, and then all of the problems that come with that, overcrowding and pollution and traffic snarls and things like that. And it's great to have more visitors, but it...
new challenges.
Yes, exactly.
You're listening to the Seminary Explorers. This podcast is brought to you every other week by Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary. I'm Jerry Christensen, and our guest is Superintendent Ed W. Clark of the Gettysburg National Military Park and Eisenhower National Historic Site. Superintendent, let me drop back just a minute. The mission of the National Park Service is conservation and outdoor recreation. It's not quite the same at this park, and so I'm asking two questions in one. Is that exactly your mission, and what is the relationship of a military park to the national park system?
Well, we are a unit of the National Park Service, and so that kind of overarching mission of all national parks to conserve the scenery and the wildlife and the objects therein and keep them essence, in good stead in perpetuity. I think I've heard our director joke on occasion that we're an agency dealing with in perpetuity working off of annual appropriations. We here at the National Military Park and the historic site certainly have that as our backdrop, but then we have specific missions, whether those missions are given to us by Congress or in some cases with national monuments and executive orders from the president, utilizing his authority. I always like to go back to some of that original legislative language. I love Victorian language and how flowery and descriptive they are. But they talk about commemorating this battlefield in the battle that occurred here, and interpreting it without censor or praise. It really is to take those activities and the struggle of both sides and really get it out there for the public in a non-biased way. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done that pretty well over time, and certainly mm-hmm. over at Eisenhower, mm-hmm. It's to commemorate his life and those times that he lived through. Certainly one of the greatest, certainly Americans, if not across the whole world of the, mm-hmm. the mid-20th century.
I want to move to a connection between the public and the public and the private sector. Taking you as the public in the park and the private sector, the Gettysburg Foundation, the Gettysburg Battlefield Foundation, was at the time unique, and where does it stand now? What's the relationship between this private enterprise or private foundation anyway,
right,
and the park? How's it going, and is it being used elsewhere? Of that model.
Sure. Well, like I said, we broadly call nonprofit organizations who are chartered to assist national parks as friends groups. So broadly speaking about friends groups, there's out of the 412 or 13 units of the Park Service, there's probably maybe about 150 of those organizations.
That many. Mm-hmm.
But the Gettysburg Foundation is in that kind of rarefied top air of maybe four or five big ones across the service. So mm-hmm. Trust for the National Mall, to the to Yellowstone, mm-hmm. to Yosemite, those are really the big players. And certainly Gettysburg Foundation and its earlier iterations, been around for about 26, 27 years and really stepped up their game and became one of the big players in the National Park Service when they undertook the mission to build and operate this visitor center.
Yeah.
It is being used as a model across the service to show how a friends group can mm-hmm. really step up their game, take on a big challenge, and really substantially improve the park experience. We regularly, I would bet you it's at least once a month, sometimes more, where different friends groups and in the National Park Service, different nonprofit organizations across the country and even internationally, mm-hmm. Parks from all over the world come to Gettysburg and look to see how we've done it here.
I've got to slip this is apropos to nothing, Superintendent, but I've got to slip this in to show you. I actually did a little research. The National Military Park here at Gettysburg was instituted by one of our least favorite generals, Daniel Sickles, who did one great thing in his life. Sorry, he thought he had done more, so I shouldn't knock that right now. And there's, of course, controversy about his reputation. But it was General Daniel Sickles who introduced the Gettysburg Military Park Bill in 1895. So you predate the Park Service, but not the system, and we're not incorporated until about 1933 or something.
Correct. Yeah. When Dan Sickles was asked why there's not a monument to him on the battlefield, he remarked that the whole battlefield is a monument to Dan Sickles. But you're right. Yeah. 1895 was the act of Congress that preserved this as a national military park. And you're right about it. Many of these national military parks came in the 1930s into the National Park Service, but in the intervening years, it was managed by the War Department.
As far as the mission is concerned, the current park looks a lot different even than those of us who've lived here for, well, I will not say how long, long enough to know that we had a visitor center which has been replaced by this current beautiful one we're sitting in right now. That had something to do with the foundation. And, of course, there's this the interpretation of the battlefield to look like it did in 1863. So there have been changes in the environment. So wooded areas have been torn down, and apple orchards have been planted,
yes,
and so on. Those will continue?
Yes. A lot of this goes back a couple of decades. The general management plan that was completed in 1999 envisioned many of those things you just discussed. And the previous several superintendents and especially a lot of the staff was very instrumental mm-hmm. in imagining what this place could be. And so you're right. It's everything from removing mature woodlots to bring back those very important sight lines. You know, it's hard to imagine, you know, doing an assault across open terrain when you're surrounded by trees, and it just does not register with people. And so that has been tremendous. And you're right, the visitor center that was over on Cemetery Hill and the Cyclorama building, both were very dated, certainly didn't meet the needs of the National Park Service in many different aspects. And then lastly, it really is, you know, was built on hallowed ground. And the beautiful, I think, thing about this site is just not the the professional design and the, you know, the great infrastructure we have, but it's in a place that is very proximal to a lot of the battlefield, but you can't see it from a lot of the, you know, the battlefield, and it doesn't set on land that was you know, which was so integral to the battle as Cemetery Hill was.
Meanwhile, I'm not completely expert on this, but I have the sense that there has been a shift in the interpretation, a new emphasis. There's a much heavier emphasis on the context for the battle, especially the people involved and the issues, most notably of African-American slavery.
Right. So this is not just at Gettysburg, but across the whole of the National Park Service. Our bread and butter will always be the military history. You know, it's the, the battle.
Yeah.
That's the reason why this military park exists. But you're right. We're trying to put it in a larger context. We talk about the civilian story. We talk about emancipation and just, you know, we really try to, the politics of it. There's so much that plays into it. You know, we live in very complex times, and sometimes history can, as you look through the lens, become oversimplified. And, you know, the leading up to and the Civil War itself and certainly the time after the Civil War was anything but simple. It was very complex. And I think people can really get too narrowly focused on one side or the other and miss the larger picture and the larger lessons that the Civil War has to offer.
As a person, where have you had to spend your last, your top three things you've had to do as park superintendent over the past 2.5 years? Public, certainly. Dealing with maintenance, what might they be? Working with your advisory boards, working with staff, what would you say the top 3-4 things are?
Wow, there's been a lot going
interviews
on interviews
with, with crazy interviews. Big waste of time for that.
Excuse
me.
At all. But the you know, I think there are several things. The first act that I did as superintendent here was looking at our licensed battlefield guide force. These guys do a tremendous job, and they really are a lot of the front line, you know, our frontline troops, if you will, that a lot of people get a very special look at this battlefield. But it really, that program hadn't been changed in quite some time, and there were a lot of improvements. We're still working on that, but I think both in terms of the testing procedures, about how we bring prospective guides through the process has been greatly improved. And we're looking now how to make them more available to the public. We turn away, shockingly, you know, thousands of people a year who are looking for a guide just because we can't. We're having a difficult time marrying available guides with the interested public, and so we're looking at that process right now. Continuing that restoration effort and maintaining what has already been restored has been a huge issue here. We have. The work that's ongoing right now on Cemetery Hill, that continuing effort back in the 1950s, you know, there was a very different mindset in the National Park Service. They wanted their infrastructure right in the heart of the resource. That's the reason why the Cyclorama building was built where it was. And today we have a very different philosophy about how to interact with our resource. And so that project right now is one of those centennial projects where it's half public. Actually, it's a little less public and a little more than half private money that's gone into that. and that's to restore Ziegler's Ravine and Ziegler's Grove, but still allowing for some limited public accommodations over there to have people who want to come to the National Cemetery and see there on Cemetery Ridge. Also, all of these hundreds of acres that have been restored are a huge maintenance challenge. We spent a tremendous amount of effort and labor in the last couple of years trying to reclaim what Mother Nature has trying to, you know, transform back into a mature forest. Mm-hmm. And we started using fire as a management tool. It's been wildly successful. And though I might get the numbers a little off, I think the proportions are very illustrative. It cost me about $6,000 to $10,000 an acre to manage, you know, as those trees, you know, continue to try to grow back, and it cost us somewhere around $150 to $200 an acre to do it by fire. So you can see why we're really trying to use fire as a management tool here. And then working with the Gettysburg Foundation to improve visitor experience has really been something I've probably put the most of my effort and time into. And that's everything looking at our programming to our social media engagement to the museum itself. And we're really trying to ramp up our rotation of objects and exhibitions. We have this this new one that just came on right at the anniversary period, focusing on the art of the Civil War. We have our exhibit spotlight, which rotates every 6 months. There's something on Alonzo Cushing and Medals of Honor awarded during the Civil War and here at Gettysburg. We have something that we're planning already in 2019 for Eisenhower's Gettysburg, telling the story of the battlefield through the eyes of General Eisenhower. So we're really trying to have a lot of offerings for people. So one of the things I've found so amazing is so many of our visitors here are repeat visitors. And I think it's important, you know, I think whether we, you know, change or not, people are going to come back. This is, you know, a very special place to many, many people. But I think we are not doing our job very well if we just kind of leave everything static. I think we have to give things, you know, in the museum and different reasons to come and frankly, different reasons to try to bring in new audiences. If we kind of sit on our laurels, our visitation continues to grow. You know, our average visitor grows older and older every year. If we don't do things to try to encourage younger people or diverse people or even new immigrants to Gettysburg, we're going to, you know, have substantially declining visitation in out years.
Much yet to be done and yet much to admire and to appreciate as the Gettysburg National Military Park and the whole of the National Park Service celebrates 100 years as a park service. Our guest has been Ed W. Clark, the superintendent of the Gettysburg National Military Park and the Eisenhower National Historic Site. I'm Jerry Christensen. Thank you for listening and have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.